From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of September 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo, a global commodity analytics and consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. We'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons Everly, Iowa facility. Ben Proust should be along. And then we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute. Along the way today, we'll hear from Lisa Braltz, her latest edition of In My Backyard, right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Let's check the numbers as they settled up in Chicago for a Friday afternoon. September wheat was down 14 cents today at $6.27¾. December at $6.41½, 11½ lower. In July, or the harvest month of next year, at $6.56½, down 11¼. The hard red and the July at $6.91¼, down 11¼ cents. Corn pit now, nearby September futures, $4.50, 29 cents lower. December at $4.59, down 7¼. And the March corn at $4.71½, 7 cents lower. The May contract at $4.79½, down 7¼. July futures in the corn pit, $4.86¼, 7½ lower. Next year's December or the 2014 contract at $4.98½, down 6¾. September soybeans at $14.88¾, 46¾ higher. November at $13.81½, down 14½. And January futures at $13.79¾, 13¾ lower. The March beans, $13.47¼, down 18 cents. The May futures, $13.15, down 16¾. July down 15½ at $13.07. And next year's November at $11.71 on a settlement price, down 25¾. Bean meal futures, $15.30 higher at $4.96.20. Bean oil, down 47 cents at $42.22. Live cattle futures finished the October at $125.25, up 42½. And December futures at $129.15, up 52½ cents. September feeders did not trade. October contract at $159.27½, 67½ cents higher. And November feeder cattle at $160.22½, up 67½ cents. October lean hogs, $90.70, finished 50 cents higher on the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, October contract, $108.28 a barrel, down 32 cents. The RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, at $2.76½. That's up 2 2/10 of a cent, rather. And the ethanol futures at $1.77¼, down 7¼ of a cent. The difference between the two is now 99¼ of a cent. Natural gas at $3.67½, 3 7/10 higher. Diesel fuel at $3.11¼ of a cent, down 3/10 of a cent. Gold futures trading at the end of the day at $1,308.40 an ounce, finished $21.90 lower. And the U.S. dollar at 81.45 is down 0.03 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Mostly sunny skies, a high of just 70 degrees. The winds have shifted and they're out of the north at 11 to 13. That's why we're cool. Clear tonight and 43 degrees with a northeast wind at 5 to 9. And then tomorrow, sunny skies and 72 degrees. As we make our way into tomorrow evening, mostly clear and 47. Sunday, a 30% chance of rainfall, partly sunny and a high of 74. And Sunday evening, that chance of rainfall will remain at 30%. Mostly cloudy skies on Sunday evening, a low of 55. Sunny on Monday and 74. Monday evening, partly cloudy and 55. And Tuesday, sunny skies and 78 degrees. By the time we get to Tuesday evening, mostly clear and 61, or rather mostly cloudy and 61. And then Wednesday, a shower or thunderstorm or two, partly sunny and a high of 83 degrees. Wednesday evening, those rainfall chances continue in a low of 65. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
This is the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. On the phone line with us today from Atchison, Kansas, at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, is Mike Zuzulo. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Good afternoon, Todd.
No, it's been a really nice day. The weather there is beautiful as it is here.
It absolutely is, especially when we had three out of the last 6 days or 7 days of 98 to 101 degree temperatures. So we will take definitely the mid-70s at this point.
And I suppose that heat really did a number on the crops in the area.
Yeah, a lot of turning, and I think you're going to see a lot of wheels moving this weekend, Todd. I think the corn that was probably benefited the most from the early rains, maybe still a little bit too wet. I haven't spoken to anybody today about it, but I would guess that you're going to see some end rows cut out. And actually, the beans out here have turned amazingly quick in the last week, and we might actually see some cutting of beans before we actually see a lot of shelling of corn.
And have you talked to anybody that's been in the bean field yet?
No, not yet, other than back in the central and eastern corn and bean belt. And it sounds like that the early beans are coming off very, very good, and that they did not get hit as badly as and the early corn, for that matter, did not get hit as badly by this August and early Sep weather.
Hey, what's up with the difference between the September and November contracts in the bean pit? Sep's up 46.75 for the day, November and on out, of course, we're lower.
Yeah, I think two things. You're probably going to be hearing about some trapped traders in the September contract, maybe some deliverable issues that were out of position and got hit pretty hard as a result of that. November did not pick up the thing and run with it, Todd. I think mainly because that bean corn ratio was already way overdone, and I think the beans are probably at a point where they need the help of the corn and the wheat to take up to the next level. Basis also got pressured pretty dramatically here on new crop for September. A lot of changes around the Corn Belt, 15 cents lower in central Illinois, takes you up to 50 cents lower on the day in Decatur, Indiana, and you go all the way to a dollar under basis in places like Michigan. So that, and I think you just had probably a real issue with the chart gaps in the market. You've got a weekly chart now that you have an island in place. You have gaps below you and gaps above you. I think the biggest thing I was surprised by in light of the report numbers was that beans could only close 13 cents higher on the week and corn only closed down 3.5 in the D's.
Have you done the ratio? What is it at the moment?
Well, I think we closed right around 3.01.
So
we're back up around 2009 highs. And, you know, this is where the USDA report, this crop right now is a mirror image. In other words, the ending stocks for both oil seeds and corn, soybeans and corn globally, ending stocks are both going up. But who's doing it? And in corn, it's going to be all United States because the foreign production actually got cut. In the beans, it's the exact opposite. Brazil and Paraguay got a 6% increase in their production, a 4.3 million ton increase in their production yesterday by USDA. That puts 6% more on ending stocks for soybeans. U.S. Crop dropped the world ending stocks down by 4%. So the net effect is an increase in ending stocks when it comes to year over year again. So you're talking about 10 million tons more this year versus last year, even in light of what we're dealing with on the U.S. crop here in the United States.
And so while we may or may not have a soybean crop that ends up short, we're still kind of up in the air about where that lands, I think.
I think so, too, and I think the harvest pressure probably was the final say to answer your question in a long-winded manner, that why didn't we go higher after the SEP closed in beans, and I think the harvest pressure side of the equation won out.
Okay, so I have a question about South America, and I don't know where you land on this one, but we keep hearing about kind of almost as if it's a battle for corn acres in Brazil and that soybeans will win that battle and they will not plant corn. But I'm wondering why that would be the case, because it's just a follow crop, right? So
It is. I think the bottom line for me and what I've come to the conclusion at this point is that the Brazilians especially are very cost-sensitive right now. They are probably the most cost-sensitive they have been in 5 or 6 years, and I wonder if that's not because they smell a change in the political wind and they smell a change in what their profitability is going to be. I saw an article today that the South Americans really haven't participated much in the lower fertilizer prices globally. So I'm guessing there's a political element to this in terms of a government subsidy or lack of subsidy, and it's really making them much more cost conscious in this environment. So they're not going to really spin their wheels hard and break their backs like they have the last 5 or 6 years to get that second Safrina crop in.
Yeah, does this mean, of course, that you're still laying some worth on the export market supporting corn over the next year or so?
Yeah, that's part of it. But you know what's neatest about this report, to me, is that the USDA is still way too low on the export side of the equation, mainly because of the production. And let me run through it real briefly.
Sure.
You've got 2011 production was 12.3 billion bushels. Exports were 12.5% of the production. Last year, drought, we went down to 6.8% exports of production. This year, USDA has us at 8.8%. I'm really in line with the idea that if you can ship out 12.5% back in 2011 when the average price was $6.22, why can't you at least do that or better? And so that gets you back up to a 1.7, 1.75 billion bushel export pace instead of USDA's 1.2. So that's really the statistical and the historical is where I'm coming from more than anything when it comes to the demand. But yes, the Chinese crop and the South American new crop, those all factor in, as does the wheat market.
Have you thought about how competition and usage both, and demand, I suppose, might factor into that? Because, of course, you have Ukraine, you have Brazil, you have Argentina, who probably all stepped up. And then you probably had, I would assume, but you'll have to tell me, there were folks that were just not using corn. So you have to kind of weigh them all back into the marketplace and see what we come up with. So
yeah, you do. And I think this is where, you know, you're right. The feed wheat is a big issue. If you
right.
see some problems in Australia, or I've been hearing problems in Russia now at the end of this week with some wheat quality issues, if you see feed wheat rear its ugly head, that's going to move me a little bit. But, you know, you bring up a huge point, Todd, and it goes back to what we talked about in Iowa. We've got total foreign production on yesterday's report for corn in the world. The foreign production dropped another 2.5 million tons, puts even more pressure on our supply. So we are the dominant player again in the world supplies until we get that new South American crop.
Willing to bet on it?
Am I willing to bet? I do my whole life every day that I live and breathe, Todd.
No, I'm not betting against you. I'm just asking the question, man. Just asking the question.
No, I know. But, yeah, that's what my whole career is founded upon, is this kind of analysis. So
yeah, I know. I know, Michael. I know. Okay, so we know where you stand on the corn. We got a pretty good idea what you're doing on the beans. What are producers to do as they go into harvest mode here? Are they going to, with their cash sales?
Yeah, if you've got to dump off the combine, you've got to dump off the combine. But I would be looking very eagerly between now and the first day of fall, and as we get closer to the end of the month and the stocks report, to be buying back those bushels or a good portion. You know, the trade has been playing this 2009 market for quite some time in corn, in my opinion, and we made a major low in early September for the Dease corn of 2009. We did the same thing for this year. The next low in 2009 came on September 21st. We really didn't look back, and by the end of the contract expiration, we saw Dease corn rally about 27%. So that's kind of the model I'm using for those producers that don't have on-farm storage and can't wait out the price turnaround.
You got questions ready for Joe Prasaki this afternoon?
I do. You betcha. That's why I was in contact with him earlier this week. God bless him. I wish him luck.
You going to ask him if he's betting on something?
Yeah, there you go.
All right, Michael. We'll talk with you again in a couple of hours. Thanks much.
Okay, thanks, Todd.
That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Atchison, Kansas, and, of course, will join us this afternoon when we record for Commodity Week. That happens at 4:30. Mike and Jackie Vakes, along with Brian Stark of the Andersons, will join us, and we'll talk with Mr. Persaki out of USDA NASS about yesterday's report. Should be a great show. I hope you join us.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Now, if you want to listen to Commodity Week, you can do that, of course, by about 6 o'clock this evening. We'll get it posted up to the website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. Probably a bit earlier if I can manage it. I'll be headed for a little football game in Eureka, so if I see you up there, I'll be looking forward to that tonight. And otherwise, tune into the radio stations, too, and you can hear Commodity Week anytime you'd like. In just a moment, we'll be back and we'll hear from Lisa Braltz with In My Backyard. Up next, Lisa Braltz goes inside her latest edition of In My Backyard.
Mathis Helmick is an indoor plant whisperer.
One of my favorite plants, I call her Eva. She's a tall Apicularia plant, and you can repot that plant every year and expose its weird little knotted root ball, and that's why I like it.
He didn't start by growing plants outside. He started inside, at home, with his mom.
My mom had a lot of tropical plants growing up, and we used to water them on Wednesdays. It was Watering Wednesday. I now know that you don't water every single plant on a specific day, but my mom happened to have a bunch of tropicals that needed watering once a week.
Mathis is from Champaign, Illinois, born and raised, and after graduating from high school, went to the Pacific Northwest to get educated and to seek his fortune. He eventually came back to Champaign and then went to Chicago for a few years, where he worked for a popular boutique plant store and garden center in that city's Ukrainian Village neighborhood. He was originally hired to move rock and plant trees, but when his coworkers saw him successfully coaxing along the tropical plants indoors.
But then I started moving things around inside the store, and I started taking care of the tropical plants inside, even though I wasn't asked to. And the owner one day was just like, "You're kind of better inside than you are outside." And I was like, "I know, I can do window displays and make vignettes, and I can do all this stuff." And I soon became a store manager and was ordering plants and teaching customers about tropical plants.
I visited Mathis at his apartment, a large, airy, and sunny space in downtown Champaign that wasn't completely filled with plants like I'd envisioned. Along with Eva, the Apicularia, he has several other plants in a variety of containers. One of those plants caught my eye. It was bright green, very cheerful, something I'd love to have myself, but I was even more interested in its container, which appeared to be a very sturdy styrofoam cooler lid. Was he for real? Could it be that indoor gardening can subscribe to some of the same principles and practices that I find really interesting for my style of outdoor gardening, like reusing and recycling?
I believe you can plant in anything. And I have nice little, those are Danish planters there, the storm pots I was talking about. I like them. They were expensive. They're great. But I like the styrofoam as well, or your plastic to-go cup here from the cafe. I planted 65 little baby succulents in 65 little plastic cups that I kept all winter with the sole purpose of reusing them, and kind of instead of putting them in the recycling bin, which is super cool, that takes energy to recycle. It's just like, why not make it a planter?
People end up really getting into indoor plants, Mathis tells me. They especially love succulents, desert plants that don't need to be watered very often. But even those of us with a thing for food-giving plants might have a chance with something inside.
That's gardening. I mean, you're not really going to eat anything that you can grow inside. You can grow some tropicals, some Meyer lemons, things like that, little citrus plants that you can just keep in a sunny window all the time, and you can actually get fruit from it. But, I mean, I'm tending to these little plants, and this is my little garden, and it's a different kind of bounty that I get from it.
Mathis thinks it's time for the Urbana-Champaign area, homes and businesses, green thumbs and black thumbs, to really get to know indoor plants, the things they can do for us. These plants give off oxygen and they clear indoor air of everyday toxins, but it's not just about the science.
And then there's just the gorgeousness of plants. I mean, I think it feels nice to look at the big round leaves of that Umbrella Scheffelera, and it's a jungle plant. And it's probably 5 feet tall now, which is small in relation to where it comes from. But it's got these big cascading round leaves that are nice. The Apicularia that I told you, the one I called Eva, dainty little leaves, so delicate, and the structure, I mean, it's like a savanna tree.
He wants so badly for indoor plants to get their due in Urbana-Champaign, he's hoping to open his own independent retail operation, Plant Mode, in the near future. He envisions a casual, friendly, personalized, local experience for his future customers. He wants to ensure they're getting the right plants for the right space and that they feel confident and that they have fun and that they keep growing things indoors. And maybe most importantly, they can come back for encouragement and advice or, you know, more plants.
I definitely, yeah, that's what's up. That's the future. I mean, the big box isn't, there's not enough room for all of us inside of it. And we can see that all the time. There's a lot of evidence of that. So let's keep it local.
For In My Backyard, I'm Lisa Braltz.
Our thanks go to Lisa Braltz for her In My Backyard segments.
Support comes from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue, beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more. Slow cooked over a wood-fired smoker. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. And from Common Ground Food Co-op, now at Lincoln Square Mall, featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. Learn more on their website at www.commonground.coop.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org and check out our calendar there. You'll find two meetings next week. We'll be in Belleville on Tuesday and up in Mazan on Thursday. It's all at willag.org.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC. Land auctions, farm management, financial services, and institutional and corporate real estate. Information on upcoming land auctions can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
On this Friday afternoon, let's check now with the cash grain market. Ben Pruce is with us. He's from the Andersons in Everly, Iowa. Good afternoon to you, Ben.
Afternoon, Todd.
Well, I talked to a couple of farmers there last week as we were leaving Everly and Estherville on our way back home. Thank you, by the way, for having us up. And they were planning on shucking corn Monday of this week and delivering to one of the local ethanol plants. Has anybody been moving?
I haven't seen, in my neck of the woods here, I haven't seen any actual harvesting yet. Guys are either started or just finishing up chopping silage. And it's looking like end of next week is when we're going to start seeing some new crop grain roll in.
And your basis had broken the week before. Did you break any more this week?
A little bit. Old crop basis, there's still some premium left in it, but, I mean, it's tapering off, and we're seeing a lot of first half, last half bids. It's 60 over here, first half, and then last half is 5 under.
And have you had producers and others out in the field? What do they think they'll harvest?
Actually here in the last couple of days here, I've had a couple guys tell me that they have the exact same crop that they did last year. And our neck of the woods, it's a decent crop, nothing glamorous by any means, but, it's decent yield, but not great.
Well, that's not too terribly bad given the conditions that they've had to deal with, I would think.
Yeah, I would agree.
And what are your bids for the day?
Here we are at 519 cash corn and 1441 on soybeans.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Ben Pruce is with the Andersons. He's at their Everly, Iowa facility. That's in the northwestern part of Iowa, not too terribly far to the south of the Minnesota border and very near Spencer if you're looking for a place to find Everly, Iowa. See what Ben's been up to and where those Andersons facilities are located. Back in just a couple of minutes, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at agrigold.com.
It's National Peanut Day. Peanuts originated in South America, probably Brazil and Peru. Records show that in the 1800s, peanuts were grown commercially in South Carolina. The first notable increase in U.S. peanut consumption came during the Civil War. Soldiers on both sides turned to peanuts for food. In this day in agricultural history in 1755, Oliver Evans was born, an American millwright. He invented the first automatic corn mill. The mill used bucket elevators and horizontal screw conveyors to move the grain and a hopper boy to cool and dry the meal. In 1833, Calcutta, India, received its very first shipment of imported ice from Boston in a special insulated hold of the clipper Tuscany. About 80 tons was lost through melting. 124 tons made it to port. At first, ice sales were disappointing. Calcutta residents did not know what to make of this novel method for cooling drinks. In 1851, Walter Reed was born, a U.S. Army pathologist. He led the experiments that proved that yellow fever is transmitted by the bite of the mosquito. Until then, it was believed that yellow fever was transmitted through clothing and bedding soiled by body fluids from yellow fever sufferers. And in 1857, Milton Hershey was born. Hershey, an American manufacturer, founded the Hershey's Chocolate Corporation. Among his innovations, using fresh milk in the production of caramels and building of what was then the world's largest chocolate manufacturing plant. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. On the phone line with us, Jim Mangel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, to take up the weather forecast for the weekend and the week ahead. Jim, thanks much for being with us today. Tell me about the forecast for tonight, because last night and then tonight, things are a lot different than they have been in, I don't know, a couple of weeks or so.
That's right. It looks like we're going to have some actual fall-like weather this weekend. High today is only going to be about 70 degrees and low tonight, 43, and it's going to be pretty clear. So I don't think we're going to have to worry about frost here, but I suspect there may be some places up in Wisconsin and Minnesota may start thinking about that. Then on Sunday, it's going to be sunny and clear again and the high of 72, and Sunday night a low of 47. So some really nice weather coming our way. And then on Sunday and Sunday night, we've even got a chance for at least a chance for thunderstorms on both days. It's about a 30 to 40% chance at this time. And then highs from Sunday all the way through next week are being a low to mid 70s and lows in the 50s. So it'll start to warm up as we get towards Wednesday and Thursday, be closer to the low 80s at that point, and another chance of rain. And the amounts look at least somewhat promising. So I think we're finally broken out of that late season heat wave and back to something a little closer to what's typical for this time of year.
What are our normal ranges for highs and lows at this time of year?
Well, if you look at our long-term averages, our average high for these dates are around 80 degrees and our average low is 55. So that kind of tells you how warm we've been the last couple of weeks with those highs in the mid upper 90s. So way above average for those weeks, and now we're back to something closer for more typical this time of year. So that's great news.
It is very, very good news. When you talked about the rainfall, do you suspect it will be in very great amounts or just a little bit?
Well, you know, it looks like if you look at the 7-day precipitation estimates, it looks like we could get some substantial amounts of rain. Over an inch accumulation between the stuff that could fall on Sunday and Monday, and then the second batch around Wednesday and Thursday. So we could have parts of Illinois that could get a half an inch up to an inch and a half. And especially the northern and northwest corner of the state may be the wettest part from all this. So at least we've got a chance of rain.
And where are the driest parts of the state to date?
Well, right now, I would say that they're probably the central part of the state. In fact, Champaign-Urbana may be one of the drier spots at this juncture. We've had a little bit of rain in western Illinois in the last week or two, so they've gotten a little bit of rain down there and a little bit up in the Chicago area. But northwest Illinois is dry. We're dry in east central Illinois, and also in the southwestern part of the state's been a little bit dry as well. But the U.S. Drought Monitor has moderate drought across the central part of Illinois at this time, and that's just because of the dry weather we've had the last 2.5 weeks or months.
Hey, thanks, Jim, for joining us, and you have a great weekend.
Okay, you too, Todd.
Jim Angel, of course, is with the Illinois State Water Survey. The Prairie Research Institute joins us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Don't forget, we'll record Commodity Week this afternoon about 4:30. Our guest, Joe Persaki, he's director of the Stats Division at USDA NASS. We'll talk about yesterday's report with him. You can hear it on our website after about 6 this evening at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.